Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Welcome into the best in paranormal podcasting. This is Darkness Radio. I'm your host, Tim Dennis. So this weekend, as a matter of fact, as we are now on the 18th of July, the 20th is the 55th anniversary of the Apollo 11 mission. And I figured this would be as good a time as any to bring in a very esteemed guest. Rod Pyle is with us today as we are celebrating the 55th anniversary of the Apollo 11 mission. Rod is a space historian who has worked with NASA at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory in the Johnson Space Center. He's written 20 books on the history and technology of space exploration and the science for major publishers in the US, UK, and Asia. And the book that we're focusing on today is one of his most popular books, First on the Moon, the Apollo 11th 50th Anniversary Experience. Now, it sold out within hours of its release. We're going to focus today on the Apollo 11 mission, what happened before it, and what got it off the ground, the space race between the U.S. and Russia. We'll focus on what eventually happened when it finally got up there to the moon, some of the things that happened surrounding the crew, and of course, what happened afterwards, and where we're at today, including a new story that came out this past week about a crater up there on the moon, or a cave on the moon, and how that may affect some of the missions surrounding the moon. According, I believe there is another news story we'll talk to Rod about today involving the moon. So, and where we're at with the moon, and subsequently, why we're in such a rush to get back to the moon. So we'll talk to Rod about that as well. Let's welcome into Darkness Radio, Rod Pyle. Rod, thank you so much for being on the program today.
Thanks for having me. It's good to see you.
Good to see you. So 55 years, Rod. It doesn't seem like time should have passed this quickly, but it has. And what a prestigious type of event to be celebrating. Yet, you know, when you think about it, technology in 55 years, man, I mean, you think of what they had at the time to blast off into space with and where we're at right now. We were talking about it before the show. We've privatized space now with SpaceX. And
partly,
right. And how many missions did you say SpaceX has run this year?
This year alone, I think they're at 61 or 62. Now, their last launch had a problem, as you know. It didn't explode. This is the Falcon 9, their workhorse rocket. But the second stage apparently had a little leak in the engine, and so the engine didn't fire for duration, so the satellites didn't make it. But, you know, let's bear in mind, this guy uses his rockets 14, 15, 20 times, which has never been done before.
Yeah.
And this wasn't the used booster, actually, that came back. It was the upper stage that had a problem. And some satellites were lost, but they were his satellites. You know, and there's no crew on this thing. It's just a cargo carrier. So it in the number of launches he's done, which at this point with the Falcon 9, I think is 316 or something. Wow. To have one or two, you know, goofs like this is not bad, because rockets are hard to make. They're big bombs with a hole in one end, right? You're trying to control the explosion coming out at a predictable rate. So it's things have really changed. It is remarkable. But you're right. You know, when you look back, so I don't think you were alive during the Apollo days. You don't look old enough.
Well, I'm 53, but still, I mean,
I just missed it.
Right. Right. Yeah. I mean, I can't say my parents were celebrating during the first during Apollo 11, but they came close. Put it that way.
Well, okay. So if you were born, let's see, that'd be about the March.
August 1970 is when I was born. So, you know.
Okay. So they were a little late.
Yeah.
So, or a little early, perhaps. So I was alive then. I was, I think, 11 when it landed. And so I'm watching this incredible drama unfold on a 13-inch black and white TV with a 480-line god-awful signal that people now would turn their noses up at. On one of the three TV networks that would cover it, right?
Which right.
is, I mean, the media, you can't even compare to today. But it was just magical, and it was astonishing that it was working. As a fanatical kid, I had followed all the flights. So I, you know, was watching the Gemini flights when I became aware of those, watched all the Apollo tests, or at least the ones that they would cover. So Apollo 4, Apollo 6, these were tests of the Saturn V rocket. And then finally, the launches of Apollo 8 out to the moon. So that's another one. I mean, this rocket that had only flown successfully twice, and actually it was 1.5 times, because on one of those flights they had some pretty serious problems, but they felt they had them figured out. So Apollo 8's going to go orbit the moon. There's no lunar module on that flight. It's just the capsule. So if they had had a problem like they did on Apollo 13, they'd still be there.
Whoa.
That would not be good for the space program. So these were daring times. It was a whole different environment then. Some people say a different NASA, but they were taking a lot of risks. And just to put it in perspective, Apollo 8 is 1968, Apollo 11 is 1969. They started working on the hardware for this roughly in 1961, some a little earlier, some a little later. But they were really dealing with electronics in the 1950s. And then anything they could invent as they were scaling up this thing towards the mid-60s, it was really primitive. It wasn't quite vacuum tubes, but it wasn't much beyond that, you know? And the computer that powered the thing all the way, the rocket had its own computer to get into orbit, but the computer that took the space capsule and the lunar module, got them out to the moon, got them into lunar orbit, took them down the lunar surface, brought them back, brought them home, was 32K.
Oh,
it wouldn't run your toaster.
Oh.
And, you know, the fact that they, so I was interviewing one of the flight directors from Apollo not long ago. We're working on a project. And I was saying, you know, the older I get, the more astonished I am that it worked. And he said, in his Texas twang, he said, oh, believe me, we were pretty impressed that it worked too. But, you know, it was a single purpose focused enterprise. The good thing is, we won the space race for those that cared, and we accomplished great things. If there's a downside, it's that hardware really was designed with a single focus.
Mm-hmm.
And when it was over, it was pretty much over. So we did repurpose the Apollo hardware for the space station, the first space station, Skylab. That was pretty much it. So then we had to start over from scratch with the space shuttle. Then, as you know, in 2011, that was done. And then we started over again with Elon Musk and SpaceX and some others. So here we are.
I know there's a small period of panic because the Russians did get the first man into space. And oh, I know, yeah, we panicked a bit. I know, was it Eisenhower or Kennedy that panicked and said, we got to get that first man up there? And
so that's a good question. I mean, it was both in a sense. So in 1957, Russia launched a Sputnik. So this is the first satellite, first artificial anything anybody's mm-hmm. put into orbit. And it's just a little metal ball about the size of a beach ball with four antenna on it and a battery circling the Earth going beep, 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 beep. That's all it did. I think it sent down temperature measurements and that was it. And it ran for a few weeks or a couple of months. Well, the world, the West, is just stricken with terror. Because we had spent years thinking, you know, we emerged from World War II victorious and whole. Russia had been smashed. And although they weren't defeated, you know, there wasn't a whole lot of Russia left by the time the war was over. Well, they make this amazing comeback, due in no small part to the German scientists they spirited away after the war, as we did. We never expected them to beat us in this, but they had larger rockets. They had a better launching capability. The technology wasn't sophisticated, but they did beat us into orbit. We had a project we were working on at the same time called Project Vanguard. This is 1957. And the Russians get their satellite up. So we're like, okay, well, you just you wait. We're going to be there in a couple of weeks. And Vanguard was this Navy rocket that was completely purpose-built for peaceful purposes. It wasn't a repurposed missile like the Russians had done. And the international media is invited, and on live TV, Vanguard gets to zero, lifts up about 5 feet, and then explodes and falls over with the satellite rolling under a nearby trash bin. That was embarrassing. So now not only are we second, but we flunked the first launch. So they go to Wernher von Braun, who at this point had been basically cooling his jets out in New Mexico at an Air Force base out there, because they didn't know what to do with him. It's like, well, we've got this guy, but he was a Nazi. Oh, he was also an SS officer. How do we cleanse this guy? You know, they were using him to design ICBM warheads, but they really needed him to do more. So finally, Eisenhower said, look, get over it. Talk to this guy. And he said in his baronial German accent, I can get you a satellite up in 80 days. And he did. So that was Explorer 1. So at least we caught up with the Russians. And Explorer 1 did a lot more than Sputnik did. Come to 1961, suddenly they put Yuri Gagarin in a single orbit of Earth. We didn't think they were ready to do that. And they always kept these things very quiet until they succeeded, because if they didn't succeed, you wouldn't hear about it, right? Kind of like China does now.
Right, yeah.
And so Gagarin orbits, and you're right, people flip out. Oh my God, how could this be? Now the U.S., we were being very careful. Gagarin took a lot of chances. That was a dangerous flight. We were flying chimpanzees in the Mercury capsule and the Redstone rocket. Redstone was a repurposed intermediate range ballistic missile, not big enough to get into orbit. So to make a long story short, crash program, got to get Alan Shepard into space. They stuff him into a Mercury capsule, launch him on a Redstone, but he doesn't go into orbit because it's not powerful enough. He just goes up this sort of ballistic loop and then comes back. They did two of those, and finally the next year they got John Glenn in orbit for three orbits. So it's this game of catch up. So now Kennedy's president, right? 1961, 62. And he's got this problem of the Russians making us look bad. Soviet Union, I shouldn't say Russians. And they've just had the failed big Bay of Pigs invasion attempt in Cuba. And there's a bunch of other stuff going on. And the bigger problem is you've got the Soviet Union and the United States, with these two very different systems, trying to influence the non-aligned nations of the world and show them that we have a better education system. We have a better business system, you know, capitalism trumps communism every day of the week and all that. And it's not looking like that. The commies are looking pretty good.
Yeah.
So that's when he made his first of the two moon speeches and said, I'm committing this country to beating the Soviet Union to the moon, not in those exact words, by the end of the decade. And if you talk to people at NASA back in the day, they sort of went, yay. Because they didn't know what they didn't know. They didn't have the metallurgy. They didn't have this anything near the size of the rocket engines they needed. Didn't have spacesuits that would work on the moon. So spending goes up. We're spending about 5% of the federal budget by 1965, as opposed to 0.5%, which is what we spend now, which is why things take longer. And next thing you know, we're angling for the moon. And that big day in July of 1969, I'm sitting there as a early teenager, and Walter Cronkite's announcing this incredible landing on the moon. Didn't realize at the time how close they came to not making it, but was there to see it. And it was truly magical. And I'll just close with, I want you to imagine from the perspective of today. And, you know, you grew up during the shuttle era, right?
Yes. Yeah. Love the
supposed to fly
shuttle.
Every week.
Yep.
Well, they made it four times a year once.
Yes, once.
I think maybe five.
Yep.
Yeah. The shuttle had problems. During the Apollo years, when it got busy, as often as every 2 months, these incredible missions of exploration were taking off. And it was just, it was a different budget. It was a different NASA, it was a different way of doing business. It was a lot more risk than we'd be taking today. But it was an amazing time to be around.
I remember with, especially with the first Columbia mission, I had a Minnesota Vikings vest I wore everywhere. And I remember going to the Space Museum here in Minnesota, or the Science Museum, I'm sorry, and getting a Columbia patch and putting it. I was so proud of the space shuttle that I put the patch on my vest. And people thought it was the weirdest thing that I'd have this space shuttle patch on my vest.
Oh, because it was a sports team vest.
Yeah, it was team's vest, but it was just, to me, it was such and I was around the same age as you were when Apollo took off, but the fact that you know, it was such a sense of pride, I think, when the space shuttle started running, that it was, you know, it was just the sense that, you know, we're back, you know, it was that type of deal, you know, even though it was really just trips back and forth into space again. But we were doing important experiments.
We were, and what was remarkable about the shuttle, technologically speaking, was that the thing worked.
Yes. Yeah.
Because, you know, it was supposed to be this faster, cheaper, better follow-on to Apollo. Well, clearly, if you look at any of the studies written since then, it's like, if we continued building and flying the Saturn V and Apollo system, which is what the Russians did. I mean, they're still flying hardware that's derived from their 1965 Soyuz 1. They've got it down to a science now, and it's very cheap to do for them. We would have saved a lot of money not doing the shuttle. To be fair, it was originally designed as a two-stage thing. So the big booster where the orange tank and the solid rocket boosters are underneath the orbiter part with the wings, that was supposed to be a larger winged spacecraft with a crew that would fly it up. The spaceborne shuttle orbiter would detach and go into orbit, and then the big one would fly back and land. You know, you clean out the ashtrays, put some gas in it, stick another shuttle in it, and off it goes, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. But it didn't work out that way. And President Nixon kept cutting the budget. And the next thing you know, we got solid rockets that cost almost as much to reuse as they did to build. And that orange tank that they dropped and expended every time. So it was a magnificent achievement. Have you been to a museum where the shuttle's being displayed?
No, I'd love to go, though.
Oh, my God, you got to do it. So I haven't seen one. I saw the one at Kennedy a couple of years ago, but we had the Endeavor in Los Angeles, and they just recently removed it because it was sitting in a big metal shed, mm-hmm. and you could walk underneath it. Now it's going to be the only exhibit of a shuttle in the world where it's vertical in launch configuration with the external tank and the solid, so it's going to be magnificent. But as it was before, you'd walk under it, you look up, and there's acres and acres of these, seemingly acres, of these heat resistant tiles. It was a mammoth thing, and to be able to get that into space on a budget was really remarkable. So while it only quote unquote went to orbit, it built us a space station. It went to the Mir, the Russian space station, and as you said, conducted a lot of research. So we learned a lot about biomedical stuff, biomechanics, engineering, and of course, with the space station, we've gone even further into those things. So we have the shuttle program to thank for the space station largely.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So a few years back, we get the announcement that we're going back to the moon. And yeah. Before we get to that announcement, I want to delve a little bit further into the Apollo 11 mission and talk sure. a little bit about that. In the second part of our program, I do want to get back into that and some of the news that's surrounded that new news and the new mission to the moon, because I think a lot of people are confused. It's kind of like, well, isn't that kind of a been there, done that type of deal? But we'll talk about that in the second part of the program. Okay. So after Kennedy had announced, you know, back in 61, we're going to the moon, and it kind of shocked everybody, and he did the famous speech at the Rice-Texas game, which really got people, I think, fired up. There was, you know, as you read into the preparation for it and the fact that, you know, a lot of the Apollo teams were kind of close teams, the team that went to, or that was part of Apollo 11 that ended up going to the moon weren't really a close-knit team. In fact,
no, they weren't.
Buzz Aldrin was kind of the outcast of the team, even though Armstrong was the one who said, you know what, I get along with everybody. I don't know why you'd want to replace Buzz Aldrin. Can you talk a little bit about that dynamic of that team and the fact that Armstrong kind of played it down and said, no, everybody kind of got along. It was jovial. It was a good deal. What was it about the dynamic of this team?
That's partly Armstrong because he was a soft-spoken, gentle guy, but it's also was kind of the test pilot ethos of the day. I'm better than you, but we're all friends, right? Because mm-hmm. they all knew they were the best. That's the whole makeup of a test pilot. But the idea with NASA and the astronaut office, a guy named Deke Slayton ran it. He was a Mercury astronaut that got grounded because he had heart problems. But he was an astronaut. He was one of the originals. So he knew how to deal with other astronauts and other test pilots. The design was any astronaut could be plucked out of any crew and put another crew in there, just interchangeable parts, like putting a new water pump on your car. Well, you know, human beings, that's never going to be quite the case. So if you look at Apollo 12, for instance, which is Pete Conrad, Alan Bean, and Dick Gordon, they were like brothers. These men truly loved each other. They were great friends. They did everything together. They're laughing all the way down at the lunar surface. They're chuckling while they're doing the moonwalk. They were as close as you can get in that kind of a setting. Apollo 11, you're right, was kind of the opposite. You had Neil Armstrong, who was this very, very competent pilot, very serious aeronautical engineer, had a dry sense of humor, very clever, but very quiet and pretty straight-laced. Not, by the way, like you saw him in First Man, that movie that I take great issue with, because they make him look like a stumbling, depressed zombie through most of it. And that wasn't Neil Armstrong. So that's Neil. He's the commander. Then you've got Mike Collins, who's the command module pilot. He stayed in orbit during the moonwalk. And he's this jocular raconteur, loved fine wine, fine food. He painted watercolors, told jokes, very lighthearted, still very serious about his job. But he's the guy you wanted at your party on the weekend because he just lit up the room. And then there's Buzz. And Buzz and I have been friends for a long time. He's a great guy. I swear to you, there's five minds trying to get out of one mouth with that guy. And here's a guy who got a doctorate in orbital dynamics and orbital mechanics before we really knew what it was at MIT. So when these other guys are at the party talking about, yeah, I met this young lady yesterday. Let me tell you about her. Or whatever the test pilots talked about. Usually it was like they were on their flight and, well, I thought I was going to buy it at that time, you know. The Buzz is over there saying, okay, so if you take the cosine of the delta V, you know, and blah, 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 blah. And people are like, I don't know what you're talking about, right? So he's intensely intellectual, still, you know, funny, interesting guy. And if you listen to the recordings of the moonwalk, that's one thing. But even more telling are the recordings, the audio recordings, when they're flying out to the moon and flying back, and they're chit-chatting and joking. They did get on pretty well. You know, I think some of the writers that have done histories of that mission have done a bit of an injustice in terms of casting them as a crew of great difference. They were different people, but they had a common goal, and that really did rule the day. There was no bickering that I know of anyway. But yeah, Buzz is fascinating. And to listen to him every time, I'm not an engineer, admittedly, but every time I listen to him, I feel like my Labrador retriever in the room with greatness, you know, because this guy is just talking about these concepts that I can barely get my head wrapped around, but it's challenging.
Yeah.
So it was very different. But I will say, when he and Neil were on the moon, and especially if you saw First Man and you saw, again, here's Neil stumbling around the moon, sobbing about his lost daughter and throwing the bracelet in the crater, which as far as we know, never happened. Listen to the recordings or watch the downlink from the moonwalk. He was a kid in a candy store. They were having a blast. Mission Control had to say about six times, Neil, as soon as he gets down the ladder, says the famous words, the next thing he's supposed to do is take out this little handle thing with a claw on the end and grab what's called the contingency sample,
okay,
which is the dirt and the rocks you grab in case you have to take off right away. We spent billions of dollars getting you to the moon. Make sure you bring something home, right?
right.
And they keep saying, Neil, contingency sample. He's like, hey, just a minute. Because he's now fascinated by the cert. He's on this other world. He's fascinated by the way when he scuffs his foot, the dust moves very slowly away from it. He sees there's craters everywhere, even craters inside craters from miles across to things the size of a dime. And he's having a blast. And he was like that through the whole mission. So very different person that you saw portrayed in that film.
And I take it, you know, there's always, what do they say? There's three sides to every story. There's your side, there's my side, there's the truth. Is that what it is?
Something like that.
But, and I take it, when you step on the moon, you would be fascinated. There wouldn't be melancholy like the First Man, or you wouldn't be absorbed or self-absorbed. You would probably be like a kid in a candy store. You would be in awe. You would see this whole new, totally different world. And the first thing you would be is wanting to be immersed in your environment and want to know every single thing that's there. Right.
Yeah.
I'm curious because you have had this relationship with Buzz Aldrin. What was his first impression when he got on that surface and saw what he saw?
From what he's told me, he was just fascinated with everything. So one thing, and it's funny because I'm friends with his son as well, and I interviewed him from the First on the Moon book, and he said some interesting things, which I'll tell you in a minute. But asking Buzz, he said, you know, the first thing that really struck me, besides the lighting, because there's no atmosphere, so it's very harsh. Mm-hmm. So you got to have that gold visor down to filter out the sun. Shadows are very distinct. And you know in your brain that one side of your spacesuit's like 250 degrees Fahrenheit above, and the other side's like 250 below.
Oh.
So without that cooling system, you're in big trouble. You're on this oxygen supply. But what he was thinking about was how to move around. So he said the gravity is less, but you still have the same amount of mass. So he spent a lot of time shuffling and then moving from side to side on his feet, kind of walking like that. And then they finally figured out this kind of bunny hop loping run. Because they had a lot to do in 2.5 hours. It was supposed to be 2 hours. They got an extension. So they were running hither and yon trying to get all the experiments put up and sampled. Oh, there's an interesting. Wait, look at that crater over there. We got to go. Oh, I saw something flash in the soil. Let me go get that. So while this is starting up, Buzz is really focusing on, okay, what's, because he's very efficient. He's an engineer.
Yeah.
What's the most efficient and effective way to move around while Neil's setting up the other stuff? Because they had this big experiment package called the ESEP they had to set up. So he thought about that a lot. Then what did he tell me? Well, so I was talking to his son because I wanted something different in that Apollo book, that last one.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, what were you thinking when your dad was on the moon? And he said something that every author wants to hear. Well, I haven't really told people this before, but I'm like, oh, yeah. Okay, tell me. He said, I was 12 years old. My dad's on the moon. And I'm watching him kind of bouncing around. I know exactly what he's doing because I know my dad, you know, he's testing out the effects of low gravity and versus mass and how to move without falling over and all that. And there was this antenna, this radio antenna, this small mesh dish on a tripod, maybe 20 feet from the lunar module that was beaming the radio and the TV messages back up to Earth. It was connected to the LEM with a cable. And he said, all I could think about, he said, I trusted NASA. I figured my dad was safe. I knew everything they did was top drawer. All I could think about was that my dad was going to trip over that cable and pull down the antenna and embarrass me in front of my friends at school. I thought, you know, teenage boys are the same everywhere, aren't they?
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's what his son was worried about. And Neil, unfortunately, he's the only one of them I've never met. So it's too late now. But if you listen to the downlink, and it is really fascinating if you've got the time. He was just fascinated by every aspect, like I said, of how small the craters got, soil dynamics, what the lunar module looked like, because it's the first time they had landed one. And it got a little beat up on the way down.
Mm-hmm.
And then, how far the legs compacted, because it was like a single-use shock absorber.
Mm-hmm.
So they were just, you know, fascinated by the mechanics of their flying machine there, too.
I'm wondering, too, here, Rod, is there, you know, I would think too, once you've completed that little 2.5 hours and you said they got that extension. So as you're taking off and of course there's the sweating of getting off the moon and getting yes. back into space and then having to get back into Earth's orbit. I mean, that's a whole different thing too. So there's the stress of that, but did they want to do a little touchdown dance once they got off of the moon and back into orbit? Was there that little sigh there?
Oh, there was relief. Well, so let me back you up a step.
Sure.
So as they were leaving the lunar module for the moonwalk, of course, it's a vacuum now because they've depressurized the thing, right? Mm-hmm. The door is open, so you can't hear anything. Apparently, Neil's backpack bumped a switch. So as they're going out, they don't know about it. So Aldrin goes out about 20 minutes later. He closes the door, leaves it slightly ajar. They go do their exploration. They come back. They get inside, they repressurize, take off their moon suits, toss out the heavy junk they're not going to use. And then they look over at the ascent engine arming switch, and that's what was broken off. The hundreds of switches in that thing, the one that arms the go rocket to get home is the one that snapped off.
Oh.
So they said, hey, NASA, you know, we got about 8 hours before we got to leave, but guess what? So on the ground, there was never a sense of panic, but they certainly mobilized, like, okay, what kind of workarounds? Because there's backups for almost everything on the lunar module. Mm-hmm. The one thing they didn't have a backup for was if the electric valves that started the go home engine didn't work. They didn't have manual valves to fix it, but they're pretty confident they'd tested this stuff exhaustively. But you needed to turn it on first.
Yeah.
So they had all these complicated workarounds, and while they were reading Buzz the instructions on how to do it, he kind of looks at the switch. It was actually a circuit breaker, it's a push in switch. Takes a Parker felt tip pin out of his pocket, takes the lid off, and goes, pops it in there, flicks the circuit breaker. So the cheapest NASA fix in history at about 25 cents. So that gets them, you know, primed to come home. So, wow. You know, Armstrong had some sleepless nights over the ascent engine, but they hit the countdown and off they go. And it was very slight. It said it was like an elevator, almost just sounded like an electric motor going up. And the thing was kind of woggling back and forth because of, I guess, uneven fuel burn or something. But they get back up into orbit. The command module, the command module and service module, the Apollo spacecraft, was, I think, up at about 60 miles in orbit. Had the lunar module not been able to get high enough, but could get up, say, half or 60% of the way, they could come down. Michael Collins could have come down lower to do an emergency docking and still get him home. Fortunately, they didn't have to do that. So they got all the way up, and they were very happy to see each other. I think from what I've read and been told by these guys, Collins was the happiest, though, because he had been sitting up there, you know, the loneliest man in history, right? He's on the backside of the moon with no radio contact with anybody and nobody there but him. First time that had ever happened. And he's thinking, if I have to come home out without these guys, I don't know how I'm ever going to live that down. You know, if they get stuck on the moon's surface, I have to leave them behind and I'll be a pariah, you know? So he writes about that. He's written a number of books, beautifully written books, and they're worth reading because it's fascinating to get more of his mindset.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, let's take our break. When we come back, let's talk about entering that Earth's atmosphere, getting home, and we'll talk a little bit about now. Let's talk about finding that cave on the moon. Let's talk about where the moon program is, why we even want to go back to the moon, what's there that we think we can find now, and where technology is now, and we'll wrap up the program. Rod Pyle is our guest. We have a link in the description of this program to Rod's website and where you can find the book that we've been referencing a little bit here on the program. It's called First on the Moon, the Apollo's 50th Anniversary Experience. And Rod's got over 20 books having to do with the space program out there and about space in general. And we'll give Rod ample time at the end of the program to plug some of his other things that are out there as well. Rod's also been on TV, and in case you didn't know, I didn't do a very good job of plugging it, but Rod has also appeared on Discovery. He's appeared space.com, lifescience.com, Huffington Post, Popular Science, as far as publications. The Discovery family, Travel Channel, you've seen his face in many, many different places. And when the video is posted here, you'll see his lovely face as well. When we come back, we'll talk more about the Apollo 11 mission, again, 55th anniversary this weekend. And we will talk about the future of the space program. It's coming up next here on the Best in Paranormal Podcasting. This is Darkness Radio.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock US-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Target, Nike, and Instacart. Stack sales on top of cash back and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. It's easy to use, and you can get your cash back sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's Rakuten, Rakuten.com.
Welcome back to the Best in Paranormal Podcasting. This is Darkness Radio. I'm your host, Tim Dennis. Our guest is Rod Pyle. We're talking the 55th anniversary of the Apollo 11 program and the launching, the successful mission, landing on the moon, and what it means to us today, 55 years later, as we, I guess, are preparing to go back. Although, Rod, there's a lot of flies in the ointment here. As we sit here in 2024, and try to figure out what it is we're doing here, especially with the semi-privatization of space between NASA and SpaceX here. When we went to break, we've now left the orbit of the moon. We're on our way back to Earth. Are there issues getting back into Earth's orbit with the Apollo 11 program? Do the guys manage to get back relatively safely, or do we have a little complication?
They're really not trying to come back into orbit per se. What they're trying to do is hit the atmosphere at just the right angle that they get enough resistance that they get pulled down into it and slow down and re-enter. So you've got, you know, a couple of degrees to play here, which when you're 250,000 miles away, that's pretty tight driving, you know?
Yeah.
So they've got to hit the atmosphere at just the right angle to dip in. They don't want to bounce off, but they also don't want to dip down too steeply, because then that increases the heating and the load, and you get crushing G-forces, and it can burn through the heat shield. But every lunar return they did, every single one worked perfectly, to the extent that the Apollo capsule actually glided a bit as it was coming back. It didn't just plunge in the atmosphere. It actually was set that they could maneuver and glide a bit to extend the reentry, keep the loads down, keep the heat down, and aim for a specific part, usually the Pacific Ocean, to return. So it was critical, but we didn't really get it in the public anyway until Apollo 13. Because they're coming home, you know, living off this lunar module, because the command module is dead, and they're having to do these course correction burns with the lunar module, which wasn't designed to do that. Mm-hmm. And they're having to line up the Earth manually because they don't have enough power to turn the computer on. I mean, it's just one thing after another. Those guys should have been dead 10 times over.
Yeah.
And it was just the persistence of NASA and the crew that got them back. So, yeah, coming home is a lot dicier than it looks, and a lot, I have to say, it was scarier. The whole thing was scarier than most of us realized. As I mean, as a young man, I got TV and I got Life magazine and the occasional newspaper article. That's it. You're like, yeah, you know, NASA's got it all figured out. It's child's play. But when you start looking at it from a historical perspective, and it could be a bit of work, because those guys were moving fast and getting things done, and they weren't worried about people like me 55 years later trying to write a book. So a lot of the primary source material doesn't even match up. But when you do look into it, it's like, this was really dangerous. There was a lot of things that could go wrong. And if you ever get to the Kennedy Space Center in the museum, there's a lunar module exhibit, and it's one of the test units they made, but it doesn't have the outer skin. It's got the inner pressure hull and these little ribs of aluminum on it. And if you're there at the right time of day, I don't recommend this, but a friend told me, if you're there at the right time of the day and get close to it, and you push on that hole with your finger, it'll go ba-doink. It's about as thick as a Coke can.
No.
Because they were fighting weight all the way. The rocket had a limited to finite amount of lifting power. They had this big, heavy space capsule on top of them. They had millions of gallons of fuel, and the lunar module had to be built like a feather. Now, it's never flying in an atmosphere, so it doesn't have to be rigid that way. It just has to kind of hold its own shape. But the astronauts took to calling it the aluminum balloon, because when it pressurized, the hull actually went kind of expanded like that. So it was, like I said, everything was right on a nice edge, and that they could get it that perfectly right. And remember, the Russians are trying the same thing. They built a lunar module, which they never tested. They were trying to get the Soyuz to work at lunar distances. And as ready as they were to take chances, which they were, they finally just decided, we can't do this. So pretty remarkable.
Man, when you think of how brave you had to be to take your life in your hands just to do that, just to take the chance.
Dude, I sat in a Gemini capsule once in a museum.
Mm-hmm.
And if you've ever driven in a little British sports car like a TR6 or an MGB, you know, yep, how you're shoulder to shoulder with the person next to you? Oh, well, yeah, that's the Gemini capsule.
Oh.
And when the hatch closes, if your average height, it's about an inch above your head. So they closed the hatch on me, and I'm sitting in there, and it took about 30 seconds for the cold sweat to start.
Yeah.
I said, okay, let me out now. Out. There were two guys that spent 14 days in orbit in that thing without being able to open the hatches, just sitting there like this. Now, that's 2 weeks in something the size of a Yugo or a smart car, less actually. You're eating, you're drinking, you're passing gas, you're taking care of all your other bodily needs with a guy right next to you and trying to sleep. I mean, these people were beyond the pale. And as a kid, I had dreams of being an astronaut, but once I met them and realized what they were all about, besides being, you know, out of shape and not smart enough, there was no chance. This is a whole different breed of human being.
Yeah. And
seriously.
No, claustrophobia would have kicked in to like you. It would have clicked in about 20 seconds in, and I would have given up. I freak out
when the elevator takes too long for the doors to open, and that's big, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's they're really something.
I like Hollywood's version of sci-fi with the big wide open spaceship, and you can walk around, and you know you've got sliding door elevators and doors and stuff, and that's much better.
When Hollywood shows Apollo, you know, they take a certain amount of creative license, and the capsule looks pretty big, but
oh yeah, yeah.
It wasn't.
No.
So we are planning to go back.
Yes, let's talk about that. So why go back to the moon? What we've been there and, you know, been there, done that. So what's the motivation to go back?
So the official reason is for science and for commerce. So for science is we visited six sites on the surface for a couple of days each, one day in Apollo 11's case, and basically explored the area of a small Midwestern town. Moon's bigger than that, you know, it's a lot bigger than that. So there's a lot of science we haven't done. Now, that said, a lot of, you know, if you look at the lunar mares, the big flat areas, they're pretty consistently similar. If you look at the mountainous ranges, they're relatively consistent. But there's a lot of science to do there. So that's that side of it. There's the adventure and achievement part. Let's not forget that with the Apollo program, for every dollar that was invested, between $16 and $24 worth of value came back to the economy through innovation, technology, industry, money invested in aerospace, you know, spinoffs that went into aircraft and medicine. I mean, the list is long and dense. So there's a lot of benefits. The country really does well when we're pushed to do something. At this point, however, the real reason, once again, is geopolitical. Mm-hmm. This was kind of going along slowly. There had been a return to the moon suggested in about 2000, the Constellation Project. That was actually a little later. I think it was 2004, George Bush. They tried to get that together. That was canceled in about 2010 because it was clear we didn't have the money to do what we wanted to do. So then 2010 to 2016, sort of, well, we got this moon, going back to the moon hardware we were working on. Maybe we'll go capture an asteroid and bring it back to Earth. No, that's too hard. Okay, we'll have a robot capture the asteroid and bring it near the moon, and then some astronauts go check it out. So here's your public relations nightmare of an asteroid, maybe the size of a small building or a large car at best, and a couple of astronauts hovering near it. And we spent how many billions of dollars to go check out, you know, this little rock? So that wasn't going to fly. So when Trump came into office, whatever our misgivings might be about him one way or the other, if we have them, he said, we got to get serious about this moon thing. So that's when it came back. Largely because when he asked his advisors, you know, what's China up to? They said, well, they plan to have astronauts on the moon by 2030. Well, that won't stand. The moon's ours, right? Yeah. We went there in the 60s and the 70s. So do we really have to go back? It depends on what we want in the big picture. Immediately, no. And in my mind, does it matter if the Chinese beat us? I grew up in a time of great nationalism, a great pride in NASA. It would bother me. But scientifically, I don't think it's a problem because I believe they'll share out of pride. However, there's a lot of concerns politically about first movers. You know, if you get there first, even though the Outer Space Treaty, which they're a signatory to, says you can't claim property, you can, by some interpretations, set up an exclusion zone saying, look, I've landed on the South Pole. This is my area of operations. Stay out.
Okay.
Well, everybody wants the South Pole because there's water ice there. Well, water's cheap on Earth. What's the big deal? It's heavy. It's hard to launch. And when you've got water on the moon for free, effectively, you can use it for breathing. You can crack it into oxygen for breathing, water for drinking, and most importantly, hydrogen and oxygen for rocket fuel. So once you've got a foundry set up on the moon to process this stuff, the rest of the solar system's a snap because you're not climbing out of this big gravity well that Earth has. So that's really what is driving this, is this notion that we both want access to those resources. And whether or not that's important kind of depends on whether or not you think space is important to the big picture. I happen to.
The other part of the South Pole, too, is, and this is the other kicker, I think, as far as China goes, is they're talking about wanting to build mud structures, or like almost like mud huts based on, or brick based on the soil that's there, right, on the moon. The other part of that story was they think the soil may be too radioactive. Do you have any thoughts about that?
Yeah. So from what we know, it's not very radioactive. And the great, so I have a podcast called This Week in Space that we do every Friday. And we had a guy on from a company called Icon,
okay,
which is a pioneer in printing structures both on Earth and off world. So they've got this really incredible lab where they're testing how to 3D print on the moon without using water, because on Earth, of course, that's what you mix the concrete. And they've got some very profound results. But the idea is, you know, you can carry your lunar habitat up with you. But again, mass is your enemy. Mm-hmm. For every extra ton you got to carry, that's 10 tons of fuel or something. I mean, it's you know, the numbers are really working against you. That's the rocket equation. So if you can go up there, dig up lunar dirt, and use it to print or build a habitat with thick enough walls, it not only gives you a structure to live in, but it also is effective in blocking the radiation. And that's the big problem on both the moon and Mars, is the radiation is killing. So you've got radiation coming from the sun, then you've got more damaging radiation for people anyway, coming from outside the solar system, so-called cosmic rays. And you want to block about against those. So one way to do that is to build a metal structure. That's not very effective. Having 3 or 4 feet, maybe 8 feet of dirt over you is very effective. But hey, there appear to be big caves on the moon. So if you can find your way down into those, thank you, God. You know, we got hundreds of feet of dirt and rock above us. You have to make sure that it's stable so it doesn't come collapsing, because a lot of these are called lava tubes. They're left over when the lava melts and runs out. Mm-hmm. back way back when. Some of them are not stable, and you actually see these valleys where they've collapsed. But if they are stable, it's instant house. And as you pointed out to me when we were corresponding, they just think they discovered a very large one.
That's
in one
right.
area. And a couple of years ago, the Japanese, with radar, which we later verified, found something about the size of Pittsburgh.
Wow.
A cave.
Wow.
So you could do a lot of living in there. You know, you put a hatch on the front, pressurize it, and boom, instant city.
Right. The one that was discovered by the Italians this past, actually it wasn't this past week, but the news story came out this past week, is 100 meters beneath the lunar surface. They say it's about, I want to say it was 240 miles away from where the astronauts of Apollo 11 first landed.
Yeah. It's in Mare Tranquillitas.
Yes. Yep. Mare Tranquillitas, however you pronounce it.
Me too.
It's very Italian. Yes. The cave was probably formed by lava flows millions or even billions of years ago. And actually, I know this is very low tech, but between you and I, that's a picture of it right there. And that is what it looks like. And as you pointed out, it'd make a heck of a shelter should you choose to launch and land there. But they're saying it's not difficult to imagine a future mission to the moon in which astronauts descend into that cave and attempt to explore further beneath the lunar surface. Now, here's the question as we start to get closer and closer to wrapping up here. Everybody's always said they imagine something within the moon, that there's maybe that the inside of the moon is somewhat hollow and that you may find something inside the moon. Have you ever subscribed to that theory?
No. And I, of course, you know, as a kid, I read First Men in the Moon and watched the movie about 100 times, even though it's pretty corny by today's standards.
Yeah.
So nobody would be pleased more than me and a whole lot of space scientists I know to find selenites inside the moon and the giant caterpillars and the moon cows and stuff. I mean, how fantastic would it be to make contact with another life form? From everything I know, and I study geology, but I'm not a geologist. We've done a lot of experiments on the moon. Of course, we drilled into it with the Apollo program and one of the Chinese rovers. They did seismic experiments. They recorded moonquakes. There's nothing there to, you know, a hollow moon would ring differently with seismic waves than a solid one.
Mm-hmm.
So it is interesting to find these big caves, and it's kind of incredible to me that they're there at that size. I always assumed they'd be smaller, but in terms of a, you know, hollow moon, the classic form with something in there, I don't buy it. That said, on Mars, which we know also has lava pits, may have lava tubes, but it's certainly got big lava pits. If you're going to look for life, where do you look? Well, you look somewhere that's temperate, maybe on the flanks of a volcano that might have moisture condensing inside because the atmosphere is a little denser down there. The temperature's right. It doesn't necessarily freeze. So if you look at the lava the craters, lava pit craters, which look like that thing you showed me from the moon a minute ago, mm-hmm. on Mars, on the flanks of some of these volcanoes, which may or may not still be thermally active, then that may be a place to find life, but it's probably going to be a moss or microbes or something, you know, yeah. which is not what we want, right? I mean, I got an episode of Ancient Aliens I was in coming out in a couple of days, and you know, that, of course, we're talking about, okay, well, what about the thing with three eyes? I mean, that's what we all want in some way, you know, hopefully benign, but, you know, extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence, as Carl Sagan said, and we're still waiting. But I got my fingers crossed that in the time I have left on Earth, that we'll make contact, and I can't wait.
Yeah, I can't either. Yeah, it's fascinating. It's extraordinary. And I sincerely hope, again, before the show, we were talking and it seems like there was one stumbling block there, yet another stumbling block. What were you saying about the moon as we were talking before the show that they...
Oh, well, so we had a rover called Viper that was going to be landed on the lunar south pole to look for volatiles, quote unquote, which primarily means frozen water, mm-hmm. among other things. And it's been going along, a couple hundreds of millions of dollars been spent on it. And I just got a press release that said NASA's, they didn't say we're canceling the mission. They're repurposing the hardware. But what that means is they're canceling the launch of this rover. And I cannot untangle from what I've read exactly what the problems were. I'll have to snoop around and ask some people. But basically, they're going to take it apart and use pieces of it on other missions. Now, that sounds smart, you know, well, that's good. You're recycling it. But there was a lot of that budget that was spent on research and design specific to this mission with this four-wheeled rover. And it doesn't include tearing it apart and putting it in another flight. So something very wrong there. I don't know what happened, but it's heart crushing because this comes right on the heels of NASA announcing this postponement to the Mars sample return mission, which is going to bring back rocks from Mars. Somewhere between $6 and $10 billion with a B. That's a lot of money, but you know, you're getting back pieces of Mars. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Just a couple months ago, they said, yeah, you know, JPL, Jet Propulsion Lab, is costing too much. We'll set out to bid to private industry and see what they can do. Well, private industry's got a long way to go to land on the moon to get to Mars reliably. So we're a little frustrated by that. And the Artemis program to return astronauts to the moon has got its challenges as well. So we got a lot of work to do in the next few years. We're going to keep up with those other guys.
Yeah, that's for sure. That's for sure. But it'll be exciting to watch. That's for sure as well. It's just hopefully they can work out the budgetary stuff and get things on the right track so that we can finally, you know.
But we're voters. You know, we can decide. And regardless of who wins the election coming up, you know, the amazing thing about the Biden administration is it was the first party change incoming administration I've ever seen that didn't cancel a bunch of stuff. He basically kept the Trump moon agenda solid, said, yeah, let's keep going. It's a good plan. If Trump gets, so Biden, I think, will continue that. If Trump gets into office, you know, there's a lot of head scratching on my part, but I think the space program will continue to forge ahead because he and his constituency are not fans of China getting back to the moon or getting to the moon before we do with people. So regardless of what else goes on, I think the space program is going to be happy.
There you go. There you go. Well, Rod Pyle, I want to thank you so much for being with us today. Again, we've got links in the description of this program so that you can check out Rod's books. And it sounds like you're going to be on Ancient Aliens soon. So we'll look for you there.
Yeah, let me see here. They just sent me Ancient Aliens, The Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence. I knew I could say this. Will air on the History Channel Friday, July 19th. Check local listings.
Well, there you go. That'll be as this airs. Nice. That will be tomorrow night. So we'll look for you tomorrow night on Ancient Aliens. So you can see Rod on Ancient Aliens tomorrow night. So that sounds like a plan.
My shining aged face on TV. Yes.
There you go. Well, there you go. That's perfect. That's perfect. Rod Pyle, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
I would like to thank Rod Pyle for being on the program today. Again, he's going to be on Ancient Aliens tomorrow night. So you got to tune in and see Rod Pyle on Ancient Aliens. His book is out there and available right now. We have a link in the description of this program. It's called First on the Moon, the Apollo 11 50th Anniversary Experience. Of course, this weekend we celebrate 55th, but the book is still good. I guarantee you, it's phenomenal. It's got a lot more information than what we gave you today, a lot more interviews, a lot more detailed information, exclusive interviews, lunar photo montages, interviews with the children of Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin, much, much more. We have a link, again, in the description of this program so you can pick up that book. Stunning book. It's a stunning book. I want you to pick that up as well. So, folks, heading into the weekend, I know it's been a crappy week, just a crappy week. I want to leave you with a good story before we head off into the sunset for the week. And again, next week, excellent week of shows for you to try and brighten up your week. So I caught this story. Again, it doesn't qualify for Dumb Crime Stupid Criminals next week because it's an uplifting story. I want to uplift you as a couple of men in Michigan, a couple of friends, ended up being a light in a little raccoon's darkness in his darkest moment. You know, it's hard for you would think for some animals to have a dark moment, but it was probably the darkest moment in this little raccoon's life. I know you're like, Tim, raccoons don't have dark moments. Yes, they do, folks. Raccoons are actually pretty intelligent. But here's the story. A group of Michigan friends went viral for saving a raccoon choking on a slice of cheese. Yes, a good old-fashioned slice of American cheese. The men saved the raccoon last Saturday in Burton, Michigan, about 60 miles northeast of Lansing. This according to John Satsinski, who's the son who shared the rescue on TikTok and Instagram. Now, the friends were gathered around a campfire early Saturday morning when the raccoon, who they've lovingly named Rocket, get it from Guardians of the Galaxy, showed up. So here comes Rocket. He was reluctant and skittish at first, but realized we weren't a threat. He got closer to us and eventually let us even pet him or her, whatever the Rocket was. I suppose they didn't have time for a ball check. Doesn't generally happen with a raccoon. Sasinski wrote in an email to USA Today. Now, the raccoon walked around and climbed up on Sasinski's leg before wandering off about. That'll happen. He returned 20 minutes later and was making a weird gesture, Sasinski said. Okay, now wait a minute. The raccoon's making a weird gesture. What could it possibly be? He perched up on his hind legs. He opened his mouth, making odd noises. Thinking he was choking, Sasinski's friend Bill began patting the raccoon on the back to help. And it is the weirdest thing. I'm telling you. Sasinski recorded it while another friend coached their friend Bill, who continued to try to save the raccoon, patting the raccoon just like that on the back. And out came a slice of cheese. Can you believe it? What had happened is the little guy got into the trash. He had gotten into the trash from our cookout earlier that day, Sasinski wrote. After Rocket moves in the video, you can see the cheese slice he had found laying on the ground. Oh, poor Rocket. Sasinski says he's glad his friend saved Rocket. He said it happened so fast. It's just an unbelievable moment, Sasinski wrote. Aw, they saved the little guy. They saved Rocket. Doesn't that just warm your heart before the weekend? Now, see, it doesn't matter where you are. I know I say it week after week after week. You could be a light in someone's darkness. Even a little raccoon who happens to be choking on a piece of cheese. So I think what I'll do now that you've heard the story is I'll post the video so you can see little Rocket being saved. How do you like that? Huh? You can watch a little video of Rocket being saved. I saw it. It's actually a little funny. And I mean, it's not funny to watch a raccoon choking, but it's kind of funny to, you know, it's an ironic funny. You know what I mean. Anyways, a couple of housekeeping items for you. One, Michigan Paracon is about 5 weeks away. Get your tickets by going to the events section at darknessradioshow.com. Come see yours truly out there. And Mally Fox out at Michigan Paracon. The other thing is Jessica Freeberg has now listed those two events for this winter for Ghost Stories, Inc. Yours truly is going to be out there in November. There you go. And it's got a Roaring Twenties theme to it. So, and she's also got a 20% off code, Darkness20, for that. There's a link in the description of this program for that. So click on that link. Get your tickets for that coming up in November. Be sure you do that as well. That'll do it for this week. Folks, thank you so much for listening. If you have a story for either Dumb Crime, Stupid Criminals, or a Parashare story you want to share with us, a paranormal experience you've had, whether it be a haunting, or a UFO experience, or an experience with Sasquatch, or the Loch Ness Monster, or any cryptid, send it along, tim@darknessradio.com. Or go to darknessradioshow.com, click on that blue button, leave us a voice note. We want to hear your lovely voice right here on the show. But send your stories along. We greatly appreciate it. We'll see you next week for another great week of the best in true crime and paranormal podcasting. You've been listening to Darkness Radio.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code iHeart or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code iHeart or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, There are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code iHeart or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code iHeart or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code iHeart or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
There's a time and a place for Filet-O-Fish, but breakfast is for sausage biscuits. McDonald's breakfast comes first. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.